Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare. All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up.
Well, hello.
And hello.
This is Aaron.
And this is Diana.
And who we are? We are at King Lear, yeah. Episode
8.
8 of Lear, episode 20 of season 2.
Yeah. Little more than halfway done with Lear. And we're going to finally get to see a little bit more of Edgar.
I feel like this play is going so fast.
I know.
This play is just flying.
It's because it's just like jam-packed with stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's crazy. One thing we discovered is that Edgar is kind of going to take the place of the fool at this point. Because there comes a point, and I think it's right after the storm, well, we see him one more scene in Gloucester's house, but where we just lose the fool, as we discussed.
Yeah, Howard. No, that's not him.
Harold.
Harold had something to say about the leaving of the fool, but of course I can't remember what he said. But
I cannot remember.
No, it was something about like the breakdown of Lear and how, you know, and my poor fool is hanged and how that's just such desolation from Lear at that point. Like he's lost absolutely everything.
Yeah, and if the fool represents joy and fun, then, you know, that's lost.
Yeah.
And that's terrible and sad. So there is some jollity, as with a lot of the tragedies, like Romeo and Juliet is very funny up until Act 3. Until it's really not, you know? And you'll see in Shakespeare in Love where he's like, it's not a comedy I'm writing now. Yeah, so it's like you have to, he had to suck them in, sort of, you know, make them happy enough to stay and listen to the really rough lesson, just like Lear has to. As we said, also the legions are kind of mounting up. So we have Albany and Cornwall, the troops of the king, which the king doesn't even know he has troops yet, but they're coming. They're on the move.
Yep.
And Lear is left with, as far as he knows, only maybe 2 or 3 people that are loyal to him.
Right.
And I think he's sort of blocking it all out now at this point. This part of his madness is that he can't deal with the fact that nobody loves him.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's all been about love all... Oh, that's what Harold Bloom says. He claims this is a play about love.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. And that that love actually is a really destructive force.
Yeah, well, when people feel they're not loved enough, yeah. Or when people are seeking love in destructive ways.
Right. Well, and that's exactly what he does.
Yeah.
He tries to force people to say that they love him. And the result is this.
Yeah.
So bad.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah. And so here in the middle of the storm, when he encounters this, quote, madman, he comes to an incredible reckoning that I see. That's it. People are just whatever they're carrying inside their skin. That's all we are.
Which is such a turnaround for him.
Huge. Huge. So it takes him being without house, without family, without sustenance of any kind, without backing, and finally without clothes, because he starts taking off his clothes in the middle of the storm, to recognize, oh, wow, being king doesn't mean shit.
I'm a human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I have to start. So it's like he has to peel back all the layers and start again from zero. Unaccommodated man, he calls it. Yeah. And that's how you find out what people really are. You take away all of their adornments and all of their support. And then you really see how they hold up under stress, how they, is it grace or is it freaking out, you know? And then, so Edgar mentions all of these interesting demons as he's pretending to be mad. And it's almost as if he did his research on what are mad people, what do mad people say?
What do mad
say?
People talk about?
Yeah. And what do
he
mad
Googled.
People, yeah, he Googled it. And he found all of these demon names and stuff like that. And when I was looking for them, like, well, how, what's a flibbertigibbet and who the fuck is smoking? I found this crazy book that apparently was a big source material for all of this stuff for Shakespeare. It's called Declaration of Egregious Popish Impostures.
I love it so much.
By Samuel Harsnett. And it was a condemnation of the practice of exorcisms and calling priests just theatrical charlatans and stuff, and condemning, basically condemning Catholic beliefs as pagan superstitions.
You know, it's...
I
don't mean to cause anybody any discomfort, but I say all religion is a cult. That's me. And so, you know, all of this pomp and circumstance that goes along with religion, you know, yeah, that's theater to keep the masses enthralled.
Yeah.
What did Karl Marx say? Religion is the opiate of the people.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not a Marxist. I am a red diaper baby, but I'm not a Marxist.
Red diaper baby.
I am.
Yeah.
But anyway, I love this. I want to go read Declaration of Egregious Popish Impostures now because I'm very interested. I wonder if there's an audiobook.
Intrigued. Oh, maybe. Well, it's a really old book.
That doesn't mean.
Also, yeah. Really?
Anything.
Maybe.
Because people do books in the public domain all the time. So.
Ah.
But isn't it funny because flibbertigibbet has come to mean someone who's, you know, a little loose in the marbles.
Flighty, yes. Erin uses this word. You've heard her use this word.
I do. I love that word. But it isn't meant to be that.
A demon.
This. Yeah, it's a demon.
It's a familiar. Yeah. A demon who follows you around.
Well, a demon who's in cahoots with you because a familiar is in cahoots with
you. Yes. But it also is a demon who takes away eyesight.
Oh, how
makes
interesting.
Cataracts and stuff. Yeah. Really interesting. So there we have an embedded eyesight theme thing there, too.
Yeah. Good.
And, you know, religion started with a lot of theatrical elements.
Of course
right?
it did.
In Greece, back in Greece. In the amphitheaters, they presented plays right alongside their religious messages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. So, because you want to keep the people... excited and interested in your religion so you can continue to control them. Yeah. Did I say that out loud? I did.
I did. Yeah.
Just and question everything.
So
question everything.
In, yeah. So you can slip in, you know, messages of various kinds. And,
It's control. It's all about control.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. All right.
Just like political debates. That's theater also. That has nothing
yeah,
to do with substance.
For sure. All of the conventions and all of that
it's
stuff.
Theater.
It's just theater. Yeah.
To control us. To make us believe certain things. Anyway, I'm done. Okay. Off of the soapbox.
Make up your own minds.
Yeah.
All right. Come to your own reckonings.
Yes.
Like King Lear here.
Yes. That.
So shall we?
Yes.
Let's see what the fuck a flibbertigibbet is all about. So we're still in the middle of the storm. Storm continues for a long time. And Kent has been leading Lear and the Fool towards this hovel, if you recall, from the last episode.
Mm-hmm. I do.
All right, Kent. Here's the place, my lord. Good, my lord, enter. The tyranny of the open night's too rough for nature to endure. Nature again. We have tyranny, which is an interesting word to lob in. So Lear has been a tyrant.
Sure has.
Sure has.
All right, and here's Lear.
Let me alone.
Good, my lord, enter here.
Wilt break my heart?
I had rather break mine own. Good, my lord, enter.
Thou thinkst 'tis much that this contentious storm invades us to the skin? So 'tis to thee. But where the greater malady is fixed, the lesser is scarce felt. Thou'dst shun a bear, but if thy flight lay toward the roaring sea, thou'dst meet the bear in the mouth. When the mind's free, the body's delicate.
Wanna go do that much?
Yeah, sure.
I love invades us to the skin.
Yeah, he's right? Using king language.
Yeah, he still has his royal pronoun there. But so he's talking about how, you know, you feel little things when you don't have huge things to be worried about. Mm-hmm. So when the greater malady is fixed, when you have an enormous problem, the little thing isn't felt. But so he's making comparison, like you would run away from a bear, but if you were running towards a horrible storm at sea and there was no way to get away, then you'd go and face the bear.
In the mouth.
In the mouth. Face to face. Face to face, yeah.
When the mind's free, the body's delicate. The tempest in my mind doth from my senses take all feeling else save what beats there. Filial ingratitude.
Yeah. Filial ingratitude. Wow. Yeah.
So when you've got nothing to think about, the body is delicate.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can feel every little pain and prick and
right.
itch.
Because your mind is fine and your mind, you know, is jumping around focusing on different things and it's like, oh, my toe.
Right? So the tempest in my mind, the storm in my mind, which is maybe why people say the storm is Lear, Lear's the storm. The tempest in my mind doth from my senses take all feeling else. All I can do is focus on what is going on in my head.
And what is it?
My daughters!
Filial ingratitude. My children's ingratitude. Yeah.
Save what beats there, except for what beats in my chest, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. My heart.
The hurt. That hurt.
Yeah. Filial ingratitude. Is it not as this mouth should tear this hand for lifting food to it? But I will punish home.
So he's comparing the ingratitude of his children as a mouth tearing the hand that feeds it.
Mm-hmm. Don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Yeah. But I will punish home. I will punish fully. Mm-hmm. But home is also a domestic reference, you know, talking about his home. I will get back to his home. I will get back to my home by punishing.
No, I will weep no more. In such a night to shut me out, pour on, I will endure. In such a night as this, O Regan Goneril, your old kind father whose frank heart gave all. That way madness lies. Let me shun that. No more of that.
Yeah, and then Kent actually cuts him off. Good, my lord, enter here.
So he's going back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
So, like, I will weep no more. He's determined to be strong. And then he thinks about them closing him out. And then he's telling the storm to keep going because he's going to endure it. And then he goes back to, in this rain, how could you do this to your kind father? I gave you everything. And then I can't think about that because it's going to make me mad. Not mad, angry, mad, crazy. Yep. Although mad, angry too. But
Both. Let me shun that. Don't think about it. And Kent is like, come on. Just get out of this crazy thunder.
Prithee, go in thyself. Seek thine own ease. So again, like he said to Kent earlier,
I'm sorry for you guys.
Yeah. Go in. Leave me out here.
Yeah, I'm fine.
This tempest will not give me leave to ponder on things would hurt me more, but I'll go in. So the storm is keeping him from thinking about all the horrible stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
Right?
He'd much rather be out there, like, worrying about the lunder.
The lunder and the lightning.
The fightening. And then he's like, okay, I'll go. And then he says to the fool, you go first.
In, boy, go first, you houseless poverty. Nay, get thee in. And the fool goes, I'll pray, and then I'll sleep.
So he's still outside, and this is his prayer.
Poor naked wretches, wheresoe'er you are, that bide the pelting of this pitiless storm. How shall your houseless heads and unfed sides, your looped and windowed raggedness, defend you from seasons such as these? Oh, I have ta'en too little care of this. Take physic, pomp. Expose thyself to feel what wretches feel, that thou mayst shake the superflux to them and show the heavens more just.
Such an interesting thing. So he starts by praying for the little people, poor naked wretches. So the other people who are out in the storm who don't
have a
shelter.
House, right?
So he's starting
or
to
clothes.
Feel this kinship, which is really interesting, with his people that he has never thought about before.
Yeah.
He's never thought about the wretches out in the rain. Never.
And this is a good soapbox moment. This is a good point to remember. When we are comfortable and we have all we need, it's very hard for us to even begin to imagine what it feels like not to have. And so we assume, or we, and I don't like assume, but we believe that everybody feels as we do.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you experience, and this is so sad that you have to experience something to believe it to be true or to care about it. I mean, you could care about it just because people tell you it's true. You could believe them, but we don't, as humans, usually do that. We have to experience it ourselves. We have to know a person with a developmental disability, intellectual disability is what we say now. We have to know somebody who's dying of cancer. We have to know what it's like to lose your home. Before we can have any kind of empathy for our fellow human beings who don't have what we have. We can make a choice for that not to be the case. We can say, I believe a person when they tell me what their experience is.
Yeah.
But we don't do that. But he does.
But even so, we don't even like seek out to know the experiences of people who are experiencing rough times because we're like, oh, you know, there but for the grace of God go I, right? Like,
well, maybe, you know, maybe that exists in our subconscious.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think about that because that could be me.
Right.
But if you really thought that could be me, then you would be kinder to your fellow humans.
Indeed. Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, I'm off.
So here he is starting to come to that place of understanding. Wow, this is what other people go through on the daily, you know, like for goodness sake, your houseless heads, unfed. I love the repetition of sounds, right? The H's, the P's. Oh, my goodness. It's like he's wow, this is terrible. Looped and windowed. So loose clothing that's full of holes, windows. He's really picturing them and trying to understand. Wow. And then he says, I have taken too little care of this. I have not paid attention
to my subjects.
Yeah. And then take physic pomp. Pomp is people who live in luxury, and physic is medicine. So he is really understanding that this episode right here with the storm is medicinal for him. He's going to come out of it a better person. He already can see that in a small way.
Mm-hmm.
Take physic, right? Learn from this thing. Learn from this experience. Expose thyself. So he's really like, okay, here I am. I'm ready to learn.
I'm gonna feel what others feel like.
Yeah. And then shake the superflux. Superflux is excess. I love that word. Superflux.
Yeah. I want to make a cartoon character called Superflux, and it's like just drops money as it flies.
Yes, that's great. That's great. Yeah, so he's saying I could shake off my excess stuff that I have way too much of, to them, to these people. So he's starting to think about evening out the balance between the haves and the have-nots. Mm. It's an incredible moment, and show the heavens more just. So again, that on par comparison of him and the gods, I have power like this. I could do this, you know, actually ease the suffering of some of my people. Wow. And just then, zaboom, the lowest of the low. Well, Edgar pretending to be the lowest of the low, you know, this one thing to be poor people, but then poor and mad is like, that's the
and
person.
And a beggar.
Yeah. That's a person nobody pays attention to. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to see. Nobody wants
untouchable.
To help. Yeah.
Like
untouchable.
Like yeah. In the castes in India.
Yeah. So here comes Edgar. Well, Kent and the fool have gone into the hovel, and then they come barreling out because something else is in there. Fathom and half! Fathom and half! Poor Tom! So he's like, oh my god, if somebody's in my hovel, why would you want my hovel, for fuck's sake, you know? It's like, I thought I was safe here, get the fuck out. Fathom and half is a measure of depth at sea, so he's like exaggerating how much water is coming down from the sky, you know? He's like, oh my god, so much water. And the fool, come not in here, nuncle, here's a spirit, help me. And Kent, give me thy hand, who's there? Fool. A spirit. He says his name's poor Tom. Kent, what art thou that dost grumble there in the straw? Come forth. So he's like, Kent is probably drawing his knife, and he's like, Jesus, I thought we'd be okay in this ridiculous, you know, lean-to in the middle of the heath. And Edgar, away! The foul fiend follows me through the sharp hawthorn blow of the winds. Hum, go to thy bed and warm thee. He's just like bursts out with some, you know, little weird thing, talking about the heath and you go find your own fucking bed. This is mine.
Right.
Maybe he's singing partly. And then he says, the foul fiend follows me. He's got this great F words, right? So he's like, I'm followed by demons. You don't want to be next to me.
And Lear, didst thou give all to thy daughters? And art thou come to this? Like, I recognize you. Like,
yeah.
Right?
Your brand of madness
right.
must have been brought on by like, unkindness.
Right.
Yeah. And Edgar. Who gives anything to poor Tom, whom the foul fiend hath led through fire and through flame, through ford and whirlpool, or bog and quagmire?
Fa, 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 fa.
Yeah, so many F words, right? He's like, fucking, fuck. That hath laid knives under his pillows, and halters in his pew, set rat's bane by his porridge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tried to poison him?
Well, those are all things that could prove to be deadly. So knives, halters are nooses. And rat's bane is poison, so the fiend tempts him to kill himself
oh,
all the time.
I see.
He's saying. Mm-hmm. But of course, killing yourself, if
is
you
a
are
sin?
Yeah, a practicing Christian, is a sin that will keep you out of heaven forever. So that's what the fiend does. The fiend, it likes, you want to do it. You know you do. Following him around.
Wait, I'm having another soapbox moment here.
Yeah.
It's an anti-religion rant again.
Okay. This is the episode for it.
When we are told that Satan walks among us and tries to get us to do things, well, A, it's a convenient excuse, but also B, if Satan exists and demons exist and they tempt you to do things like kill yourself, they aren't likely to be tempting you to read that book or marry that person, or it just seems silly to me that a demon would waste their time. If they can gather you to hell by having you kill yourself, that seems like the easiest route.
Yeah.
This, all these other things, you know, eating the wrong things, cutting
yeah,
your
yeah,
hair,
yeah.
wearing clothes that's not supposed, that,
oh,
that just
on.
Seems like a very
that's
long and roundabout route for a demon to take. If
yeah.
a demon is reaping souls for Satan, he's going the most direct.
Yeah, suicide seems like, you know, the thing
to do.
He would tempt you to do more than other things, yeah.
All right, mm-hmm. I'm off.
Oh, I was going to talk about orifices.
Go ahead.
So, little side note here, because I've talked about it in another place, but it seems appropriate here as Edgar's ranting about the foul fiend. They believed that, well, they truly believed in hell as a
place.
Yeah, an actual geographical location underneath your feet. And it was painted by painters all the time. And so they truly believed in these images of demons who were just below the surface of the earth, just waiting to grab you. So if there was any fissure in the earth, any hole, you know, they could reach up and grab you. And so then, speaking of holes, they believed that demons came up from the underneath the earth and entered you through your lower orifices. And therefore, they thought women were much more susceptible to demons since they have more of those.
Hmm. Yes.
Correct. Yes.
That's
correct.
Why Diana ranted about the direction in Frances McDormand's Lady Macbeth.
Yeah.
Because she looked up when she said, "Come, you spirits
that tend on mortal thoughts."
Yeah, unsex me here.
Yeah,
looking up, not down.
No, those kind of spirits.
They don't live come from above.
Down below, in the hell and the fire and also
yeah. Hell is a slang for vajayjay.
Vajayjay. Yep. So okay. Edgar has been entered by demons via his naked parts.
Well, he hasn't really, but...
Right.
Yeah.
But now he's doing a whole description of what has happened to him so that he can scare these people away. I'm sure he recognizes the king.
Yeah, no, he knows exactly what he's doing.
He knows exactly what's happening here. And he's like, whoa, the whole domestic thing came to my doorstep. This is insane. Yeah. So the fiend has done this. The fiend has made him proud of heart to ride on a bay trotting horse over 4-inched bridges.
4-inched bridges.
No, impossibly narrow. So he's like made me proud and made me think I could do anything even though it seemed impossible.
Okay.
You know, so it made me boastful. Made him to course his own shadow for a traitor. Chase's shadow, like, you're a traitor, you're trying to follow me.
I'm gonna kill you. Stab, stab, stab in the ground. Yeah.
And then he, like Lear, kind of vacillates back and forth between, and then, oh, sorry, hi, you know, kind of thing. So, bless thy five wits. And I have five wits. We talked about the five senses and the five, and the humors and all those things. But the five wits were common wit, which was, you know, being funny. Imagination, fantasy, fun. Estimation, because you have to reach beyond what's right in front of you to estimate what might happen or estimate how many things are coming your way. And then memory. I love that. Just in case you wanted to know what the five wits were. And then he calls himself Tomsicold. Oh, do-de-do-de-do-de-do-de-do. Bless thee from whirlwinds, star blasting, and taking. Do poor Tom some charity, whom the foul fiend vexes. There, could I have him now? And there, and there, and there again, and there. So Tom's cold. He's cold. Of course he's cold. And he's singing. And then so he issues blessings like a priest, which is interesting. So talk about your charlatan, you know, pagan, whatever, superstitions. Star blasting is the malignant influence of the stars. Taking is swindling. So he's like, I hope these things don't happen to you. And then these things happen to me. So can you give me something? Charity is sure. Give me some money. Mm-hmm. And then there, I think, there could I have him now. He's imagining he's capturing little demons who are trying to get him.
And Lear, have his daughters brought him to this pass? Couldst thou save nothing? Wouldst thou give him all?
Yeah, so now he's starting to even confuse himself.
With?
And Edgar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fool just makes a very obvious observation. Nay, he reserved a blanket, else we had all been shamed.
Thank God he has a blanket, so we're not seeing his dick.
Yeah.
Lear, now all the plagues that in the pendulous air hang faded o'er men's faults, light on thy daughters.
So he's imagining he could curse Edgar's daughters for being so unkind to him.
Yep.
And Kent, he hath no daughters, sir.
Death, traitor! Nothing could have subdued nature to such a lowness but his unkind daughters. Is it the fashion that discarded fathers should have thus little mercy on their flesh? Judicious punishment. 'Twas this flesh begot those pelican daughters.
Yeah. So nothing could have brought him this low except for...
unkind daughters.
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
And so now he sees Edgar having unkind daughters and himself. And he's like, oh, this must be how fashion is going now. All unneeded fathers are being thrown out into the storm.
Yeah.
That's how it is. But then he says, judicious.
Yes.
Is fitting.
Yes.
Fitting punishment. And then he brings in pelicans. So,
So I should read that differently because yeah. It should be... should have this little mercy on their flesh. And then he says, judicious punishment. 'twas this flesh, those, 'twas this flesh begot those pelican daughters. In other words, I'm their father. So
I should be punished.
I should
be
punished.
It's my fault.
Yeah.
Well, which is really interesting. It's my fault for raising them the way they were raised.
I think so.
But pelicans were said to be, young pelicans were said to suck their mother's blood. So he's like, that's why he calls them pelican daughters. They're sucking everything out of me. And Edgar picks up the word pelican and turns it into pillicock, which means penis. Pillicock sat on Pillicock Hill. Allo, 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 allo. So, penis and a hill.
It's a mound. Yeah, mound.
A mound.
Venus,
the
right.
Mound, the lady mound. Yeah. And fool. Oh, my God. This cold night will turn us all to fools and madmen. So there's the two words together, fools and madmen. So madman is going to replace the fool now in this scene going forward. So interesting. That's the hinge right there. And Edgar. Take heed of the foul fiend. Obey thy parents. Keep thy words justice. Swear not. Commit not with man's sworn spouse. Set not thy sweetheart on proud array. Tom's a cold.
What hast thou been?
A serving man. So that first speech is almost like reciting the Ten Commandments in a weird madman sort of a way. You know, don't sleep with your friend's wife and blah, blah, blah. But I like set not thy sweetheart on proud array. So don't, there could be two different ways. Like if you separate that word out, sweetheart, then it's you. But if it's sweetheart, then it's your beloved. So don't make too much of your beloved because they're also a human. Or don't put your heart out into the world for people to stomp on. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't like that interpretation. I mean, he could be feeling that,
yeah.
Certainly. But I'm going to say, little mini soapbox, you will never find true friendship or love or joy if you're not vulnerable.
Yeah, if you don't risk your heart.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just saying. Yeah. Okay. Done.
But it's interesting to, you know, is it other that he's talking about or is it self?
It could be both.
Yeah, it could be both. And then Lear wants to know more about him.
Where did you come from?
Yeah.
What
are
you
doing? What have you been? A serving man, proud in heart and mind, that curled my hair, wore gloves in my cap, served the lust of my mistress's heart, and did the act of darkness with her.
So I was vain. I curled my hair. I dressed fancily, and I fucked my mistress.
Fucked my mistress. So it's kind of like what Kent accused Oswald of.
Yes.
All those things. Swore as many oaths as I spake words and broke them in the sweet face of heaven. One that slept in the contriving of lust and waked to do it.
So I swore oaths. So I made pacts with God and then broke them.
Yep.
And then I slept in the contriving of lust, figured out how to get laid.
I went to sleep thinking about how to get laid.
And I woke up to do it.
And I woke up to get laid. Because
yeah.
In my sleep, I figured it out. Wine loved I deeply, dice dearly, and in women out-paramoured the Turk. I had more women than a guy with a harem. Yeah. False of heart, light of ear, bloody of hand, hog in sloth, fox in stealth, wolf in greediness, dog in madness, lion in prey.
Wow. So I believed gossip.
Yeah, light of ear. I was easily persuaded by gossip. I let myself believe any of that stuff.
I killed people.
I killed people.
I was messy. I snuck around. I was greedy.
And then lion and prey, I was like chasing after people, you know, to kill them in as a lion. So with all of this imagery, it's like a human being behaving as an animal at every possible turn that they could.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then some warnings for others. Let not the creaking of shoes nor the rustling of silks betray thy poor heart to woman. Keep thy foot out of brothels, thy hand out of plackets, thy pen from lender's books, and defy the foul fiend. Still through the hawthorn blows the cold wind. Sessa, mon nanny, mulf, dolphin, my boy, Sessa! Let him trot by. So it's almost like he says really wise things and then he realizes, oh,
I can't be that wise.
I should be a madman.
Yeah. Hey, now I have to overdo the madness to cover up the
Yeah. Yeah. So let not the creaking of shoes or rustling of silks betray that poor heart to woman. It's like not to expose yourself to love, you know, in this way, like, you know.
Yeah, but also, I mean, yes, but also silks makes one imagine a certain kind of woman, yeah. Right? A woman who might take advantage of you, you know, as opposed to a good woman.
Yeah.
Who, you know.
And I like creaking. That implies sort of sneaking around and being, yeah. You know, underhanded about things.
Yeah.
Keep thy foot out of broth. So don't go to whorehouses. Thy hand out of placket. Plackets are openings in petticoats. So keep your hands to your fucking self. Thy pen from lender's books. Don't sign promissory notes and lose all your money. And defy the foul fiend, and you will, you know, you will resist the devil yeah. if you do these things. And then he has to go back to his wacky little song. And cessa is like cease, but it's also French, you know, cessa. That's it.
Yeah.
Let him trot by and like let the fiend go by you. Don't pay attention to him.
Yeah. And Lear. Thou wert better in a grave than to answer with thy uncovered body. This extremity of the skies, is man no more than this? Consider him well. Thou owest the worm no silk, the beast no hide, the sheep no wool, the cat no perfume. Huh? There's three ons are sophisticated.
So sophisticated meaning adulterated, impure. And that's so the three aunts, which means three of us, the three of us are standing here with our fancy clothes and our perfume and our coats made out of beast hide. Mm-hmm. And we are impure. And you are actually the pure man, the perfect, you know, the expression of
cat. No perfume because of cat
civet.
Oh, civet. Yeah. Yeah. OK.
Yeah.
That has to do with pooping. Yeah.
So yeah, it's anal glands. It's like things that you get out of the anal glands of cats, which they make into perfume.
Fabulous.
Yummy. Cat farts.
Fabulous. Okay. Okay. So then, is man no more than this? Consider him well. Thou owest the worm no silk, the beast no hide, the sheep no wool, the cat no perfume. Huh? Here's three uns are sophisticated. Thou art the thing itself. An accommodated man is no more but such a poor, bare, forked animal as thou art. Off. Off, you lendings! Come, unbutton here.
Yeah. So this is what humans are. Mm. Just this. You, inside your skin. Forked means two-legged. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And then off, you lendings. All of the stuff that I'm wearing has been lent me by something else.
Yep.
An animal of some kind. And so he starts taking off his clothing. Come on, button here. And the fool is like, no. Prithee, nuncle, be contented. 'Tis a naughty night to swim in. Now a little fire in a wild field where like an old lecher's heart, a small spark, all the rest on's body cold. Look, here comes a walking fire. Now the fool's starting to sound a little whack, too. Mm. But he's like, no, please don't take off your clothes.
Whatever you do.
It's a bad night for being naked to be, you know, to swim in.
A naughty
swim
night
in the water.
To swim in. I love that. I love that.
And then he's trying for a joke. A little fire in a wild field. So one little fire is like a little tiny spark in a vast open space is like an old lecher. He has a little spark that, you know, makes him think naughty thoughts, but he can't really get it up. So he can't inspire the rest of him to be sparked. And then he sees something coming. Look, here comes a walking fire, which is a torch, right? And here comes Gloucester with a torch. And Edgar sees him first. And can you imagine what is happening there? So he calls him immediately a demon. This is the foul flibbertigibbet. There it is, the word. He begins at curfew and walks at first cock. He gives the web and pin, squints the eye, and makes the hare lip, mildews the white wheat, and hurts the poor creature of earth. So this is what flibbertigibbet does. Flibbertigibbet the demon. He begins at curfew, which was 9 p.m. All people had to be inside. And he walks at first cock. First cock was actually midnight. I don't think the cock crows at that hour, but there must have been a bell or something. So he gives the web and the pin. Those are the things that happen when you get cataracts, right? You have webs over your eyes that, like, you can't see. Squints the eye. He makes your eyes squint. And then he makes a hair lip, you know, the deformity of your lips. Mildews the white wheat. White wheat is the ripening wheat. And he hurts us all. So Flibbertigibbet is bad. Gloucester is bad to Edgar right now. He's afraid of him. And he will find out maybe something different, but we'll see.
But wait a second. He is behaving this way. It's not right. He's trying to keep Gloucester away from him because Gloucester can identify him.
Right. Well, he's completely covered in mud and he's scratched. Yeah. If you remember his speech, what he said he was going to do to himself, he's scratched. He's bleeding. Yeah. He's covered in mud. His hair is all. So just as we all say, we don't look at these people. Gloucester's not going to give this guy another glance. He would never imagine that it's his son. And then he starts to sing. Swithold footed thrice the wold, he met the nightmare and her ninefold, bitter alight and her troth plight, and aroint thee, witch, aroint thee. So Swithold is maybe Saint Withold, who was a protector against evil spirits. So this was a nursery rhyme. And you know how you... ring around the rosy, a pocket full of posy. That was a protector against plague.
Plague, right.
So here's a nursery rhyme that protects you against evil spirits that walk at night. Because arointhi is a way of saying, get away, be gone.
Yeah.
And in
Macbeth.
Macbeth, Act 1, Scene 4,
the witch
describes someone telling her that. The nightmare was an incubus who suffocates her victims at night, and her ninefold is her nine babies. So I'm like, yikes, terrifying thing I saw out on the high country. The wold is the high country, like the hills, you know. And Kent, how fares your grace?
What's he?
Who's there? What is to seek?
In Gloucester. What are you there? Your names?
Poor Tom, that eats the swimming frog, the toad, the tadpole, the wall newt, and the water.
I eat really gross stuff.
The wall newt, the lizard that crawls on walls, and the lizard that swims in the water. That in the fury of his heart, when the foul fiend rages, eats cow dung for salads.
Yummy.
Yummy cow poop. Swallows the old rat and the ditch dog, drinks the green mantle of the standing pool, who is whipped from tithing to tithing and stocked and punished and imprisoned. Blech. Who hath three suits to his back, six shirts to his body, horse to ride and weapon to wear. But mice and rats and such small deer have been Tom's food for 7 long years. Beware, my follower. Peace, smoke in peace, thou fiend.
Well, I eat all kinds of gross stuff. I drink the green gunk out of ditches and stuff. And I'm whipped from tithing to tithing. Tithing is when you give money to the church.
Yeah. So in between people doing good things for the church, giving them money, they beat the insane people on the street. So he's making a commentary on, like, you can't just go to church one day and be good once, and then this other 6 days of the week be a total asshole.
Ding, 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 ding,
ding. It doesn't work that way.
That is knowledge for our times.
Mm. And I've been stocked and punished, so I was put in the stocks. I was whipped and imprisoned. And then here he is with the Oswald description, and I've had three suits to my back. I was a serving person.
Mm-hmm.
I had horse, I had weapon, but it didn't keep me from this fate.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a cautionary tale, right?
Smulking is the familiar.
Is another fiend, who's a familiar who follows you closely and stays with you.
And Gloucester, what? Hath your grace no better company?
The Prince of Darkness is a gentleman. Modo, he's called, and Mahu.
Our flesh and blood, my lord, is grown so vile that it doth hate what gets it.
Poor Tom's a colt.
So our own children are flesh and blood.
Yeah, have
our
become so horrible
that they hate their parents.
They hate the people who begot, you know, so gets them as begot them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fascinating because he's standing in front of the son that he thinks hates him, who doesn't. Mm-hmm. And he has the completely wrong impression of the son who does, in fact, hate him with a burning liver, burning hot.
Yeah. And Gloucester, go in with me. My duty cannot suffer to obey in all your daughter's hard commands, though their injunction be to bar my doors and let this tyrannous knight take hold upon you. Yet have I ventured to come seek you out and bring you where both fire and food is ready. So I'm not going to obey Regan's command, mm-hmm. that you know, I have to keep you out of doors. I'm going to take you to where you're safe, even though I do it on pain of death.
Yeah. My duty cannot suffer. Right? Mm-hmm. Allow me. My duty to you.
Yeah. And Lear, first, let me talk with this philosopher. What is the cause of thunder?
Now he's starting to go a little south,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Philosopher was, in those days, was one who studied nature and sometimes the occult. So understands the workings of all things natural. And Kent, good my lord, take his offer. Go into the house.
I'll talk a word with this same learned Theban. What is your study?
How to prevent the fiend and to kill vermin.
Lear, let me ask you one word in private.
And then Kent speaks to Gloucester while Lear and Edgar are off talking. Importune him once more to go, my lord. His wits begin to unsettle.
Gloucester, canst thou blame him? His daughters seek his death. Oh, that good Kent. He said it would be thus, poor banished man. Thou sayest the king grows mad? I'll tell thee, friend, I'm almost mad myself. I had a son, now outlawed from my blood. He sought my life, but lately, very late, I loved him, friend. No father his son dearer. True to tell thee, the grief hath crazed my wits. What a night's this. I do beseech your grace. So
he turns back to Lear, yeah, trying to get him. But isn't that interesting? That speech and that son is within earshot. Does he hear him?
That's a decision you have to make.
Right. That's a good place for an interesting choice for the actor, director, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. and a little debate. Like, if Edgar hears him, how does that change things? If he doesn't hear him, what was this speech for?
Yeah.
Why make this speech here now if there wasn't some kind of consequence? Because it's just Gloucester telling about things we already know. And Kent already knows.
Yeah,
right?
But he also is saying...
Well, he's not speaking to...
But he also... He's admitting that his wits are leaving him as well.
Yeah.
You know, he feels crazy
because of
this. Yeah. And Lear, when he turns to...
And also he doesn't know that Kent is Kent. He says...
He doesn't know that Kent is Kent. Right.
So he's telling some random servant about how much it hurts that his son is out of his life.
Right.
Yeah.
So Gloucester says, I do beseech your grace. And Lear, oh, cry you mercy, sir. Noble philosopher, your company.
Times are cold.
So come with us, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Noble philosopher is Edgar.
Right. And your company. I want you to come with us.
I want you to come.
Yeah. And Gloucester, in, fellow, there, into the hovel. Keep thee warm. Lear, come, let's in all.
This way, my lord.
Lear, with him. I will keep still with my philosopher.
So notice my philosopher has now replaced my fool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And so Gloucester is trying to shove Edgar back into the hovel. We're not taking you. We're going to my house. And Kent is just like, just let him take the fucking crazy person because otherwise he won't come. So Kent, good my lord, soothe him. Let him take the fellow.
Gloucester, take him you on.
Sirrah, come on. Go along with us.
Lear, come, good Athenian. Gloucester, no words. No words. Hush.
Yeah, so they have to go quietly to the house. Very, yeah, good luck with the madman, the fool, the crazy king. Good luck with the quiet there. So Edgar finishes with this little rhyme. Child Roland to the dark tower came. His word was still fie, foe, and fum. I smell the blood of a British man. So Edgar is probably unwilling to go back to Gloucester's castle.
That's a bad place for him
to be. That's not a good place for him. So he'd much rather be in the hovel, and now he can't really say no. The king wants him to come. Child Roland was part of the Legend of Charlemagne, which if you want to look that up, that's interesting. And then Fifofum, that's the Jack and the Beanstalk rhyme.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Fifofum, I smell the blood of an Englishman.
Yeah. And he says, British man, which is, you know, Britain, this is old Britain. And it's a reference to mortality. Like, we can smell somebody on the verge of death.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lear.
Scary and icky, you know? But yes.
Yes. All right. And then we have another small scene with Edmund. So his story is developing here. Act 3, Scene 5 is just Cornwall and Edmund, and it's Edmund handing over that letter.
Yeah.
And these two scenes with Edmund have sort of sandwiched this scene out in the heath with the madness. Cornwall. I will have my revenge ere I depart his house.
To Edmund. How, my lord, I may be censured that nature thus gives way to loyalty. Something fears me to think of.
Yeah, right. So he's saying, I will be judged, censured, that nature, that my natural loyalty to my father is changing over to loyalty to someone else.
Yeah.
Something fears me to think of.
I'm
worried that others will think badly about me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure, for betraying my father. Cornwall. I now perceive it was not altogether your brother's evil disposition made him seek his death, but a provoking merit set a work by a reprovable badness in himself. So he's like, because of Gloucester's hiding of this very important information, he has put Gloucester conveniently into a box that makes him a villain, right? Because he's like, I see. Edgar wanting him dead was not only because of this whole inheriting thing, but because the guy is actually a terrible person.
Well, he goes behind people's backs.
Mm-hmm. A provoking merit. So he's there's a reason for him to be this, you know, this subject of somebody's malice.
Right. And Edmund, how malicious is my fortune that I must repent to be just. This is the letter which he spoke of, which approves him an intelligent party to the advantages of France. Oh, heavens, that this treason were not I the detector.
So,
I wish I wasn't the person who found this out.
Yeah.
Or I wish this wasn't true, and I wish I wasn't the person who found it out. But, yeah.
Yeah.
He knows that.
How malicious is my fortune? My fortune is so bad that I have to be the one to betray my father.
Yeah. And he's, you know.
I wish it wasn't a treasonous letter. Hint, hint. Cornwall, go with me to the Duchess.
Edmund, if the matter of this paper be certain, you have mighty business in hand.
Yes, I think he wants in on the battle. He wants to be part of it. Which normally, I mean, he could have joined up in his own way, but he wouldn't be actually leading any battalions or anything like that. He could have been a foot soldier as a bastard, but he wants in a bigger way. Cornwall, true or false, it hath made thee Earl of Gloucester. Just with a word, he's disowned Gloucester and replaced him with Edmund. So Edmund is going to be the Earl of Gloucester from now on.
Yep.
Seek out where thy father is, that he may be ready for our apprehension.
For our catching him.
Catching him.
We're going to catch him.
Go tell me where
him.
He is.
Catch him and kill him. Edmund, if I find him comforting the king, it will stuff his suspicion more fully.
Now, in your text, it might say that that's an aside, but why? Why couldn't he say that to Cornwall, the biggest villain of all? If I find him comforting the king, it will stuff it. It will make him seem even more suspicious. That's all he's saying. Mm-hmm. He's not saying anything that he couldn't say out loud in front of Cornwall. And then it says aloud.
I will persevere in my course of loyalty, though the conflict be sore between that and my blood.
So it could just be a little bit flopping back and forth, maybe, you know, like, ooh, he's going to be real suspicious. And then, but I'm going to stay loyal to you. no matter what, no matter if that, you know, is tough for me, because I should have a loyalty to my family, my blood. Cornwall, I will lay trust upon thee, and thou shalt find a dear father in my love.
But aren't Edmund and Cornwall kind of peers in age?
Yeah.
Ew.
Well, he's like, father, like, I'll take care of you. I'm going to give
your
you,
liege,
I'm going to give you everything that you never got from your father.
Mm-hmm.
And some editions say dearer father, which is interesting, you know. Oh boy, there's an alliance of lovely people.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. And this is where it just all goes downhill.
Yeah.
It just all goes to hell from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There ain't no uphill.
No.
There's a momentary up between Lear and Cordelia.
Well, can I just tell you? Harold Bloom talks a lot about that and how betrayed people feel by that. But we'll talk about that when we get to it.
Oh. Interesting.
Because
we'll see how we feel when we get there.
Yeah, and also, you know, how you feel when we get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alrighty.
All right. I'm Diana.
I'm Erin.
And this has been fuck Shakespeare.
And fuck Cornwall. And fuck Edmund.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And fuck the treatment of mad people.
Yeah, even now, even today, fuck the treatment.
Soapbox.
I'm going to hold it because we're at the end. But just, you know, equal funding for mental health services.
Yeah.
And accessible mental health services. That's all I got.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.